This episode is brought to you by the 5-Day Money Challenge. Get your stuff together with money and increase your confidence in just 5 days. Save your seat at whitneyhanson.com/moneychallenge and join in on the fun. Hello and welcome to the Money Nerds Podcast, where owning a calculator, budgeting your money, and having a net worth is actually cool. I'm your host, Whitney Hanson, and each week I'll be chatting with inspiring people to learn their secrets to financial success. Now let's dive into the show. Hey guys, welcome back to the show. Today I have a really fun interview with one of my good friends, Mary Beth Storjahan. And before we dive into all the interview stuff, because this one is incredible, I think you guys are going to have a really good time with it. And just all of her stories are so amazing. She's just a fun person altogether. But before we dive into that, let's go ahead and share the favorite session of the day, which is Money Wins. Okay. This is a killer money win. This money win comes from Allie, and she says, "Today I pulled the trigger and finished paying off $4,000 that I accumulated on a mileage credit card since moving cross country in September. Thanks, tax return. Moving forward, nothing is going on that card that I can't pay off monthly. Booyah." Love it, Allie. Congratulations and on paying off that card. That is such a good feeling when you finally see that you can pay off debt, and it's actually a lot more easily accessible than we think sometimes. So I'm really crazy proud of you. And I love the whole last part of your comment too about not putting anything on that card unless you can pay it off monthly. I think that's a damn good habit to build up. And I think that's going to help you be successful in your financial life. So congrats to you on that. All right, guys, I'm starting to allude to a really fun thing that I've been working on called the Money Summit. And it's a little early, so don't sweat it yet, but I just want you to at least get this on your radar. The Money Summit is a way for 30 different personal finance people to come together, and all female speakers teach about money. So you can listen to these speakers completely for free, and I'm really excited about that. It's launching in July 20th through the 22nd. So put those dates on your calendar now. It's all going to be online, but I just wanted to put my little feelers out there, let you know something cool is happening, and I'm stoked about it. And we'll definitely give you more information when it comes a little bit closer. All right, let's dive into today's episode. So our guest is Mary Beth Storjahan. She's a certified financial planner. She's founder of Workable Wealth, which is not your typical financial planner. That was something that I was really drawn to her early on over, is that her approach is really unique and different. Guys, she has 12 years of experience in the financial services industry. She works as an author, she's a speaker, she's a financial coach, and she has a really no-nonsense, kind of no-bullshit approach that I really do appreciate working with individuals and couples in their 20s and up through about 40s. She works with them all across the United States. She helps them make smart and educated choices with their money. Super important. Here's a couple things that I thought were really impressive about Mary Beth. She was top 40 under 40 by Investment News. She was 10 young advisors to watch by Financial Advisor Magazine. And she was also one of the 10 of the best personal finance experts on Twitter. Like, what the heck, right? She's kicking butt. She is frequently seen on NBC. She's been in the U.S. News and World Report, Wall Street Journal, Glamour, Women's Health, Yahoo Finance, CNBC, Forbes. Like, I could go on forever. But the cool thing, too, is she has a book. So if you're listening to this girl and you're like, God, she's really got it together, go buy her book. Go check it out. It's called Work Your Wealth, 9 Steps to Making Smarter Choices with Your Money. And it was a number one new release. Yeah. So Mary Beth is a rock star, right? But here's what we talk about in this episode. We discuss expense ratios and what are the expense ratios that your investments have. So we go into detail about what that actually means and how you have to be kind of careful of that. What the financial goals are that you have right now. So whatever you think you want to do, how do you actually get there? And what do you really want? So we dive into that quite a bit, which I really appreciated. We talk about what's actually killing your budget, how you can make small changes to get towards your financial goals, financial frenemies. We talk a lot about financial frenemies, how to negotiate a higher salary, what putting your money where your heart is, what does that actually mean, and when introducing a neutral third party makes sense for your financial life. all of this and so much more. Guys, I'm so excited to introduce you to my friend Mary Beth Storjahan from workablewealth.com. All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of the Money Nerds Podcast. Today, I am joined by one of my good friends, my good online friends, actually. It's kind of funny, Mary Beth Storjahan. Mary Beth, thank you for taking some time to come chat with us and share all of your cool stories.
Thanks so much for having me, Whitney. I appreciate it.
So I'm trying to think of how we actually connected, and I think it was from maybe Instagram.
I feel like it was Instagram. Yeah, I think that was it. It's Which is so funny how that works out.
Isn't that weird? Yeah, you get these like online friends before you actually meet in person. So yeah. It was really cool. We actually got to kind of meet in FinCon, I think it was last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at a coffee shop, right? Did we like bump into each other in the coffee shop?
Yes, that's exactly what happened. So, okay, you've been in this industry for a little while, which I think is really cool. And especially as a female in the industry, I think it's even better. But can you tell everybody, if they've never heard of your brand, can you just give them all a little bit about what you do and how you help people?
Sure. So I am a certified financial planner. I'm the founder of Workable Wealth. Workable Wealth is a virtual financial planning firm. I have clients all around the country. Basically in their late 20s to early 40s is kind of my sweet spot of who I work with. And my goal really is to do comprehensive planning and to help them make smarter choices with their money. So do you want me to kind of share how I ended up here?
Yeah. Do you mind?
Yeah, sure. So I actually fell into the industry, into the financial planning industry in college. What happened was part of my story is I always say I grew up in a family that talked loudly about finances as I was growing up. I'm full Italian, so loudly is finger quotes. And I had to work from the time I was 15. And so when it came time for me to go to school, one of the first things I had to do, obviously, for college was get a job. So my sophomore year of college, after having an amazing stint selling cell phones at the mall, freshman, beginning sophomore year, I got a job as a receptionist in a financial planning firm. And it was basically me looking for an office job as like an assistant. And once I got that job, though, I kind of was exposed to this whole other world of financial planning and money management, which was really interesting to me coming from the family that I came from. I just remember there was a lot of fights and a lot of heated discussions as I was growing up. So then I got this job in this firm, and then I'm sitting there up front meeting clients as they're coming in, and I'm seeing them meet with these financial advisors, and then they're coming in stressed out, and then they're leaving with a plan. And something kind of clicked that you can actually control your money instead of it controlling you. And I was hooked, and I was lucky enough at the time where I was going to school at San Diego State, they actually had a financial planning major specifically. So I switched my major. I was business at the time I was international business trying to go to Italy. That was my goal. Move to Italy, learn Italian, move to Italy, live there. That's expensive when you're a college student. So I switched my major specifically to financial planning and kicked off my career in the industry at like 20 years old. Yeah, 20 years old, I kicked off my career. And I've been in the industry ever since. I'm going on 13 years now. And I basically started to climb the ladder. I spent the most of my career, I was small firms, and I also worked at your traditional Morgan Stanley, Smith Barney. This was before the crash. So I worked at both of them separately before they merged. And I climbed the corporate ladder, spent a lot of time working with 60-year-olds, 70-year-olds, helping everybody retire. And my whole passion always came back to educating around the basics, so getting people empowered around their finances because of how I grew up, because I knew that there wasn't that financial education that my family had. So it was something that really resonated with me and something I was very passionate about. And unfortunately, something that I also couldn't do in any of the firms that I worked at. This generation, the generation that I work with, is basically seen as not having quote unquote enough money to go after or to help or to service. And I was told repeatedly no, or that they wouldn't pay for financial advice. And so that's actually what prompted me to kick off my business in 2013.
That's amazing that was the mindset. And I think it still kind of is today too. I don't think it's changed that much where it's, don't worry about millennials. They'll figure it out. When they have money is when we'll talk to them. And it's such a bummer to see that, but it's kind of the industry. Do you find that it's still that way today?
Oh yeah, definitely. It's become more the discussion has definitely evolved. It's talked about more openly now, but on the majority, yes, it's still definitely disregarded. This generation is definitely still ignored. And it's becoming more talked about now as a way of, oh, don't ignore your client's children because they'll leave you when they inherit the money. Like, that's kind of how it's being introduced into the industry, which is still really unfortunate because I think getting in early and educating this generation and me being able to build those relationships now and help them to actually accumulate their money is a really solid business strategy for me because I'm in my 30s and I still have 30 years left of my career. They have 30 years left of their career. So let's grow together.
And I think one of the cool things that you do too that's very unique in the financial industry is you're a fee-only planner. So can you tell everybody, if they've never heard that before, what does that actually mean?
Fee-only basically means that when you come to me for advice, anything that I recommend to you is because I think that it is a fabulous product. I think it is the best for your situation. I vetted them out, but I will not receive a kickback. The only fees I am paid are paid by my client directly to me. So if I think you need life insurance, for example, I'm going to refer you to somebody who I think will give great service to get you the best policy, and I'll help you to shop for it. But I'm not going to get a kickback from that life insurance policy that is placed with you. So basically what fee only means is I don't charge any commissions. If we do your investments, then there's a fee for the investments to be managed. For financial planning, there's a flat fee, but there's never any commission, which means, let's say that you need life insurance and there's three different policies and they're all going to pay me a commission. Well, what's to stop me from saying, oh, let's, you know, you need this one that's actually going to pay me the highest commission. So that's the biggest thing, is fee only means that I'm only being paid by you as the client. There's no incentive for me to be recommending any other company. And that also means typically that I'm acting as a fiduciary, which means that I'm acting in your best interest at all times.
I think that's such a good way to go too. And it seems like it's a newer concept. When did that actually start, I guess, catching steam?
It's been around for a while. I mean, there's been like a CFP, a fee only. It's been around for quite some time. It's now just become more mainstream with things like Tony Robbins' book. Like, I mean, looking at for a NAPFA, that basically, then those are all fee only planners. He put a plug for NAPFA in there and then NAPFA blew up and people are constantly going to that website now looking for fee only planners. So it's always been something, and fees have always been an issue. It's just dependent upon where they're targeted. So the other things that you and I know that are talked about are also expense ratios for mutual funds and exchange traded funds. And like, that's become a hot topic too, whereas you used to be normal to pay 1% for a mutual fund or over that. And now we look at exchange traded funds and you can pay like 0.15% through Vanguard. So I think like it just kind of, as technology advances and as like social media takes into play, I think it just becomes more easily accessible. Mm-hmm. And that's where it's becoming more popular now, because there's so much information online and you can realize like, hey, well, what fees am I paying? What's ethical? What's not ethical? You can start to educate yourself and ask more questions versus like using the stockbroker down the street that your parents used.
Do you want to hear something kind of cringeworthy?
Yes.
When I was 19, I started doing investing through mutual funds with a bigger firm, not going to say the name. And when I did that, I had no clue about fees because I thought I was doing the right thing. I'm trying to save for retirement. I put it into my Roth. And I'm not kidding you. Later on, I found out I was paying 7% on the back end.
Oh, ouch.
I know. I'm like, holy shit. Like, how many people are actually doing this and don't even realize it?
A lot of people have no idea. And that's the interesting thing for me too, when clients come to me, with also accounts at some of the bigger names and some of the names that I love I'm looking at, you know, I'm like, oh, well, you have your mutual fund with this company. Do you realize the expense ratio is over 1% and you can get something similar over here? And a lot of people just don't even think. They think like, what am I paying you? But they don't think about the fees that are hidden from them as well. And that again is part of what my big thing is with launching my firm, is the education aspect of like understanding what questions you should be asking and what you should be looking at. Even when my husband started his new job a few years ago, I couldn't help it. I'm like looking at his 401k and I'm analyzing the fees on all the funds. And I'm basically saying, you have to call your HR department. These expense ratios are really high. And he was like, what do I say in this email?
You're like, get out of the way. Let me write it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's hilarious. I think that's really cool, though. It's something that we do need to be more aware of. And it's so hidden and it seems really intimidating. But I think that's why working with somebody like you is so helpful, is because it is scary at first and you don't know it. And nobody expects you to know that in the beginning, but you've got to learn it somehow. So I think that that's a cool way to go, too.
Yeah, exactly. I think a lot of people this is the thing with millennials too. A lot of people say they don't want the advice. They don't need the advice. They won't pay for the advice. And I also hear that millennials are sitting on tons of cash apparently because they're afraid of the market, which also don't even get me started there. But I think it really just comes down to our generation is not afraid. There's just a lack of general basic education there. So nobody is scared. They're just not sure of what actually they should be doing. So people freeze. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest thing. And that's why I launched my firm was like, before we even talk about mutual funds or exchange traded funds, let's first make sure you know what a stock or a bond is. Mm-hmm. And especially with women, I basically make sure that they explain to me what a stock or a bond is first before I even go into the recommendations on investments, because I spent so much time at these other traditional firms seeing women in their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. It doesn't matter how old they were, just their eyes glazed over with all the technical terms and all of the reports and all of the complicated jargon that isn't necessary, right? That's not empowering you around your finances, looking at tons of spreadsheets. That's not helpful to a lot of people. So with my company, it's nice to do the basic education and also, again, tie it into your values and your goals.
Yeah, that's a good way to go. I think the values and goals piece is huge for people. It really kind of humanizes the whole process. So mm-hmm. I like that you do that. How do you approach that with somebody? So like, let's say I'm your client and I'm like, hey, Mary Beth, what do I do? How do you start approaching the values and goals piece first?
So one of the questions I ask on all of my consultation calls, and I actually use these answers as part of the planning process going forward, is if we were talking 3 years from today, what would have had to happen personally, professionally, and financially in order for you to be happy with the progress that you've made? And especially with couples, I make them answer separately. So you can't like say copy or ditto or any of that stuff. But I think having that conversation around the personal, professional, and financial, you really get some goals out there in terms of where do you see your career going? Are you looking to buy a home? Is travel something that's important to you? So you kind of start to get those things down on paper. And then from there, I start to quantify them. Like, okay, well, traveling every year, what does that look like? Or buying a new home, what do homes go for in your area? And how important is it to you to have, you know, X features in your home versus is your family growing? So we really start to dig into, so what are your goals? Also, why are they important to you? Why is having this kind of lifestyle important to you? So a lot of people, a lot of millennials especially, you probably hear this as well, a lot of people want to buy a house. Mm-hmm. Because it's the quote unquote American dream. They feel like they should. They feel like they're missing out on an opportunity. And then we talk about it. And it's because their parents say they should buy a house or somebody's saying they're missing out on something. And then digging in more, would you rather have that money right now for travel and flexibility and push off buying a home for 5 more years? Or are you prepared to change your lifestyle to keep up with the maintenance of a home? So really it's digging into, like, what are the goals that are on your mind right now and why are they important to you? How do they impact you? How do they make you happy? And are they really aligned with your values or are they things that you think you quote unquote should be doing? Mm-hmm. So having those conversations and getting clear on what those things are makes it so much easier to do everything else in the financial planning process, because then you're invested, right? If you know, like, hey, I'm changing my cash flow around so that I can take that trip to Europe every year, or I'm changing my cash flow around so that I can leave my job and start my business full time, or so we can have a kid, plan the wedding, buy the house, whatever those things are. When you're excited about your goals and you're realizing, oh my gosh, we can actually make this work in X time frame, it's way easier to make those changes with your finances. Where a lot of people struggle with making changes around their finances is they actually don't have any idea of what their actual goals are. They're not really sure what they're working towards. They're like, oh, okay, I'm going to retire. I need to save because I'm supposed to retire at some point in time. Great. Or I need to save because I want to buy a house. I'm not actually sure when that's going to happen, but let's just start stashing away. So there's no clarity around what they're actually working towards or ways to measure the progress. And I see that as being one of the hindrances. So when I work with my clients, we lay out that 3-year vision, and then we kind of start to put a plan in place. I'm a big fan of separate accounts. I'm a big fan of, like, where can we cut back in your cash flow? And then leveraging really unique opportunities like employer stock options and restricted, like, there's really unique ways for people to have corporate jobs and really great tax strategies for entrepreneurs as well. So leveraging those things that you wouldn't necessarily think to make it so you can meet those goals at a faster pace.
I love that. So what are a couple examples of maybe the average client that you work with when you're looking at reducing expenses? Because I know a lot of the people listening to this podcast are trying to pay off debt and they're trying to reduce expenses. Where do you see people overspending? Like, what's really killing our budgets?
So there's the tradition, dining out is like the biggest one always. Dining out is huge. Travel is a big one, especially for this generation in terms of there's the vacations that we want to take and then, which is travel, but there's also people who are not considering the travel back home for holidays, the travel back home for weddings, the bachelorette parties, the, you know, bridal showers, the baby shower, whatever it is, all of the family and holiday stuff that happens. They're not considering that their quote unquote travel, and that is really derailing. So that's the biggest thing, is right there getting clear on how much do you need for travel each year and knowing what you can say yes and you need to say no to make that happen. So travel, dining out, and then unfortunately, people who have already bought their homes, I see them locked into really high mortgages, especially those who bought their homes pre having children, right? So you bought your home, you have a high mortgage, and then you didn't actually think to factor in what's childcare going to cost, which could be another mortgage payment basically on the other side. So sometimes it's that tough decision of like, do you stay in the home? Do you cut back? Do you move? Like, what do you do there? But I've seen that's unfortunately a big one that you're kind of a little bit more stuck in. But I'd say it's housing expenses, it's the dining out, it's the travel. Those are some of the big things. And it's uncomfortable, but again, it's uncomfortable saying no, but you have to be willing to get uncomfortable for a little while to be comfortable in the long run. So again, that's why having those clear-cut goals in place, if you're trying to pay down debt, yeah, you shouldn't be going to Hawaii or whatever. Like, that's just, it's not realistic. If you have a plan in place for the debt pay down and you're saving towards travel, then fantastic. Like, you know, when you're paying down your debt, you have that end goal in mind. Great. If you're comfortable with that, then you don't necessarily have to derail. But if you're making minimum payments on your credit card debt and you're taking trips or buying yourself and going out to dinner, yeah, something needs to change and it's time for you to grow up.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, that's it. You got to be an adult.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't want to be an adult. It's hard too. I work with a lot of women, and the interesting thing for me is there's always a balance. There's a lot of guilt and anxiety and shame around money that I see a lot with, which we don't necessarily see as much, I think, in the FinCon community that we're in. We're all gung-ho, like, let's pay down this debt. Like, let's look at these numbers and let's save some money here, people. But I work with a lot of creative fueler women around and with their money. And there's a lot of like anxiety and shame and stress that they carry with it. So when I say like, be a grown up, like that would actually make a lot of people like not call me. So there's the balance also of being able to reward yourself and understand, hey, if you're putting $100 extra towards your credit card payment, because that's what works for you right now, then fantastic. And it's making those small changes along the way as well. But yeah, I'd say asking yourself the tough questions and being willing to say like, hey, this is what I'm working towards. This is what's important right now. Dining out with my friends is not going to get me to where I want to be.
I think that's spot on. It's when you don't have that clear vision of what would you rather do with that money, it makes it really hard to get motivated about paying off debt or increasing your savings. Like, that's not a sexy thing to do. Like, when you look at that from an outside perspective, it seems kind of boring. You're like, not very motivated at all. But if I'm trying to pay off debt so I can go live in Thailand for 2 months, heck yeah, sign me up. Like, it's exactly. A lot more motivating.
Exactly. And the big thing I think is also that, especially in the social media day and age that we live in, is that we all have some sense of FOMO. We all have a fear of missing out, especially because we see everybody else's filtered lives and we think they're all living the high life and we don't see any of the behind the things, things that are going on, which is really interesting. It was really funny. I was just thinking of you recently. Where did you go?
I went to the beautiful pictures. Greece.
No, you went to Greece. Yes. But there was the beautiful picture, the fire lookout. Is that what you?
Oh yeah. The fire lookout.
You went a while ago, right? And I remember going down like a rabbit hole, figuring out where you went and thinking, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And it looks beautiful and blah, blah, blah. And then you posted something on Instagram, which was like an aha behind the scenes. And you said something about they were out of propane and you froze your butt off.
Oh, dude, I did.
Which was so funny to me because I remember seeing your pictures and being like, oh, this is beautiful. This is amazing that she does these things. And I think I saw them a couple months ago. And then I saw that post recently and I was like, uh-huh. And that's what happens behind the scenes. You're freezing your butt off. And that's real life too, that you book these amazing adventures, but there's that not glamorous side. And that's the funny part though, right? Like, we very rarely do those little snippets of like, this was actually what happened, but look at my, you know, and I'm guilty too. Like, look at me on this beautiful beach. Cool. Never mind, you know, yep. You don't see any of that. And I think, so we all, it's just a different time that we live in now. So I think a lot of people have that fear of missing out, which if you don't have it in check, really derails your finances, because again, you don't want to miss that dinner. So then you're spending money that you don't have, or you don't want to miss that trip. So you're spending money that you don't have, or you also want to have a new car that you're spending money that you don't have, or, you know, you think you need a new car. So we do so much without actually stopping to think, is this really in line with my values? And what is this triggering? And how is this in tune with the goals that I have for my life? And when you have those goals, it's way easier to say no. But if you aren't clear on what's important to you, it's way easier to lose track of your money.
I've got to touch on something too. This whole FOMO thing is so interesting, because we do, we somehow associate it with either physical appearance or travel or money or something like that. But from an entrepreneurial standpoint, this is a very real thing too. Like I look at your Instagram and some of the other people that are in our FinCon community, and I'm like, my God, they're killing it. But what we're not seeing is, like, as you're on TV, because you're like consistently on TV, so props to you. But it's like we're seeing your highlight reel of, oh, Mary Beth was on TV again. We're not seeing the 12 years that you worked up to that.
Oh, yeah. And you're also not seeing the behind the scenes 30 minutes before the show up to my house where I'm cleaning up, because I get literally an hour notice that he's coming over and we have baby stuff all over our living room. And I'm like, my husband thankfully works from home too. And I'm like, we got to clean up. And he's like, is Bob coming over? And I'm like, Bob is coming over. We know this routine now. So I spend an hour, because I inevitably never have my hair and makeup done when he calls me. I spend an hour getting my face and my hair done. He come, and then my husband cleans the kitchen and shoves all the baby stuff out of the shot. Like, that's basically what happens. So you don't see any of that. And you don't see the one day my daughter was home sick and he's trying to film and she's talking in the background and my husband had to like get her out of the room, you know, which is like, those are the funny things, right? I've started doing a couple of behind the scenes, like the Insta videos when that does happen now, but it, yeah, you don't see that. And I don't talk, you know, I don't talk about it because you're trying to project like this image, and no, you don't see, yeah, you don't see the behind the scenes work, or like the, yeah, the days that I'm like, I'm going to work out, or I'm going to work in my gym clothes. And then, yes, and then I get a call that I'm going to be on the news, which is, most people would be super excited about it. And I'm very thankful for the opportunity and that they lean on me. But yeah, then I'm like, oh man, I got to get ready.
I guess I have to shower today.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's real life, right? Like I, you know, I take pictures on the 2 days a week that I have my hair and makeup done, because that's life.
That's how it goes. So. This is hilarious to me. I love this. And I think it's cool that you're showing more of the behind the scenes and the authenticity behind who you are, your family, your brand, because at the end of the day, it's like, yes, you're a business and you're a very successful business, but you're still a human being. And I think that that's cool. And it's a good distinction for people to hear.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting to me too. And that's where when I launched my company in 2013, there wasn't a lot of people targeting Gen Y or millennials. And that's kind of what I put my stake in the ground on, that I was working with, that I'm working with Gen Y, which has now evolved to Gen Y and Gen X. But when I took that stand and then I got active on Twitter, it was really putting myself out there. And I mean, I'm on the news a lot out here, like on NBC, because I tweeted to Consumer Bob, this guy, he's the one, Bob Hansen is, who interviews me on the news a lot. I tweeted an article to him. He tweeted something about little black dresses. I tweeted to him that I wrote a blog post about Roth IRAs and little black dresses. And then he reached out to me like the next day, and he's been interviewing me for the past 3 years off and on when he needs me. But it was because of a tweet, you know? And so I just think it's so interesting how, and we also, the online entrepreneurs, were so worried about, yes, I've been quoted a lot in the media too, and it looks great, but I think there's too much focus there. There's almost too much focus there now of like, get the as seen in, get the mentions, get these fancy things for your website. But never mind. I get worried that there's too much focus there as opposed to providing quality service and content to people. Like, don't worry about being flashy. My whole thing also is to actually do the work. Cause I feel like I have 13 years of experience. So I'm confident in the process and what I walk my clients through. I get a little iffy when we have now newer financial planners who are right out of college coming in, who want to be financial planners, quote unquote, or trying to get quoted in the media, have no work experience because they don't want to put in the time. And then they're building the flashy websites and focusing just on the marketing. And that's where I kind of struggle too, like with, and that's the FOMO entrepreneur, right? They want to go from zero to 100 and skip the in-between work. And I think we see that a lot with people who are getting into business in general. You want to skip over the 10 to 13 years that you should put into it first to build something.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so. Yeah. Is that how you kind of came up with the name of your brand too, Workable Wealth?
It popped into my mind. I'm still trying. I still always try to remember. Like, I know I was I was toying with names for forever. And then, I was almost going like very female centered at first. I think it was like, I wanted like She Wealth and like all of these different things. And then Workable Wealth kind of just popped into my mind. And it was just like, it was totally like an aha. and it was available and that was it. And then Work Your Wealth has kind of evolved as like a sub brand with the book and the podcast. So the Workable Wealth is the financial planning firm and Work Your Wealth is the brand for the book and the podcast and a lot of the like coaching stuff that I do. And that kind of evolved. I don't know either. Like I think it evolved from, just kind of creating freemiums and stuff for my site that kind of came out from there as well. So, and it's actually really stuck. I think it really resonates as well, because again, wealth is something that means something different to everybody else. So it doesn't matter if you have $5,000 in the bank or $500,000 in the bank, but you can still make it work for you in different ways. And so I really like that it's kind of open-ended.
Yeah. And I like too, that it's, you've got the name work in your title. Cause really at the end of the day, this stuff, it's work. It's not always like cakewalk in the park and like, it's just not that way. So it is work.
Exactly. And the thing is it's almost a journey that's never done, right? Like there's constantly going to be roadblocks. And that's what I say about a financial plan. I create the financial plan for you. And it's outdated almost immediately. Something changes, your bank account balances change, life changes, people are, you know, coming after you or coming to you for resources and money or whatever it is. So I think your plan is always going to consistently evolve. And I think it's just understanding, again, being in tune with those goals and those values and updating and adjusting along the way is really important. And being comfortable talking about money, being comfortable having those conversations or knowing who you won't have those conversations with one way or the other. But so often people just don't want to do the work. And it goes the same with like our health too, right? Everything takes work to maintain. So with your finances, it's just the same. It's just understanding again. My whole thing is when we say they're not smart with money or they're not good with money, I always have to stop and pause and say, what does that actually look like to you? What does being smart with money look like? What does being good with money look like? Does that mean you need to read the Wall Street Journal every day? Or does that mean you just need to be maxing out your Roth IRA and having your money in an emergency fund? So it's really interesting, but yeah, it is work and there's no sugarcoating it. So again, be an adult.
Be an adult. I know. And it's like, it sounds like such
easy. How to be an adult with Mary Beth Still John.
How to be an adult. We might have to name that this episode. Yeah. That being an authentic adult. So, okay, let's chat a little bit about the book because I'm so excited. I actually just ordered it and I'm really, really stoked to dive into it, but I haven't got a chance to read it yet. So it's Workable Wealth or Work Your Wealth, excuse me.
Work Your Wealth. Yeah.
So what if people pick this up, like what makes it different than any other personal finance book?
There's a big glittery gold dollar sign on the front. So right off the bat, that makes a difference.
Totally does.
So realistically what I decided to do with Work Your Wealth is I obviously have had a lot of people reach out to me since I launched my business who could use financial planning assistance and help in some way. And not everybody can afford to pay me or can pay my fees. And so with writing Work Your Wealth, my goal was to basically take my financial planning process and break it down into a process that you can implement in your life on your own. So with the book, it basically walks you through exactly how to do that on a chapter by chapter basis. And the things that are different about that are that we basically talk about in the beginning, what kind of life do you want? And then also now that you know what kind of life that you want, how do you put your money where your heart is? So a lot of financial planning books will just dig into like the practicality of, okay, the numbers, like let's quantify, let's go from there. But there's a little bit more touchy feelingness in this. There's a little bit more money psychology that you're going to find in the front end of the book. And then there's also some relatable stories. When you find a book that's geared towards those in their 20s, 30s, 40s, I talk to people who have $50,000 for a salary. I talk to people who have $300,000 for a salary. Most of them still have no idea where their money is going. A lot of people just don't have their cash flow under control. So I kind of talk about that and I talk about the money beliefs and scripts and things that can influence us and our behaviors going forward. And then I walk through step by step. So understanding your credit, kicking your debt to the curb. So those are kind of some basic things that you're going to learn that you would probably get from other books as well. But the other things, I wrap up the book with some real life money issues. So interesting things that I talk about are your financial frenemies. So people that can kind of derail you with your finances without you even knowing about it. So the person who's like, oh, can you spot me? and constantly, you're constantly spotting somebody, or the person who is the one upper and making you feel, you know, you're excited about something, but then they one up you and then you don't feel so excited about it anymore. And the people who want to know how much money you make, so, or how much you paid for something. So interesting things like that, that we experience in our everyday life. I wrap the book up with those things and some information on how to tackle them. So that also makes it unique as well.
I love that. And I love that it's a financial frenemies. I think that's hilarious. That's a really cute term.
Which is funny, right? Because you don't think about it, but until you're there. And I joke, you know, I'm Italian, so it's kind of like how much they always want to know. People want to know how much I'm making, or, you know, how much I paid for something. It's just like the topic of conversation, which is they're either looking to be impressed or they're looking to be horrified. One way, you know, you're going into the conversation being judged. And so trying to figure out how to navigate it. Right. And yeah, it's really interesting. Or like the must be nicers, you know, like you feel guilty for how hard you've worked to be able to do these things, which I'm sure maybe you get when you get to travel, like must be nice. And you're like, it is. And I work really hard to do it. Thank you.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. So, which I think we all face. And so that, and we don't really talk about that, right? Again, because this is, money is such an uncomfortable topic. Again, it's really comfortable for our FinCon community, but the majority of people are really uncomfortable talking about finances or don't have trusted resources they can go to. So when they're faced with these conversations, they don't know how to respond. And that kind of translates into other areas of their lives. Like the majority of people don't know how to negotiate salaries and those things, again, because they're uncomfortable talking about money.
Does your book go into negotiation on salaries at all?
Yes, it does.
Sweet.
Yeah. That's a big thing for me, is the negotiating. It was so funny. I was just talking to a client. I had her 6-month review and I said my goal for her. I was like, my goal for you is to be making over 6 figures. And the next week she was like, I got my raise and I'm making over 6 figures. She's like, I feel like we manifested that. I was like, oh my gosh. So, but yeah, the negotiating and getting comfortable, that's a huge thing that is so overlooked. And I'm constantly quantifying it. Like, if you got $5,000 more a year for the next, you know, 20 years and like that grew, do you understand how much money that is just by you asking a question or getting uncomfortable again for a little while so you can be more comfortable for the long run?
How do you get more comfortable with that?
For negotiating, you mean?
Yeah.
I really think it comes down to practice and preparation. So when you're going in for negotiation, the biggest thing I always say, I always walked in with an agenda. I walked in with bullet points of what have I accomplished? What have I contributed to the team? What do I still have to contribute to the team? What kind of roles have I taken on? So I always have an agenda when I go in. I always also do my research in terms of what have I been making? What have I been getting for increases, and what's the going rate in the industry? And my other thing is, again, I get comfortable asking for a higher amount than even I want. So I always aim high. I aim higher than what I would be, or I did, I don't do anymore. I would aim higher than I would be comfortable with so that I could meet in the middle mark at what I wanted. Basically, and that's like the biggest thing too. So ask for more than you want, because you're likely going to end up negotiating back down to what it is you really want. And then practicing with a friend, a partner, whatever it is, and getting pushback. That's the biggest thing, is if you're likely going to get pushback. So you need to be comfortable responding to that and having somebody tell you, no, it's not in the budget. And then you being comfortable saying, okay, well, what is in the budget? When can we reevaluate? Is there anything that you can add in aside from compensation? Can I work from home more often? Can I have more vacation? Being comfortable having that negotiating, like that conversation, that you, if you're prepared going into it for the, no, it's not in the budget, instead of just saying, okay, you can figure out other ways that would still make you happy, and go into it asking for other things that, you know, might not necessarily be a higher paycheck, but it could still give you more flexibility and freedom to do other things.
That's really, really good advice too. So I hope everybody like rewinds that and listens to that again, because even if it's not compensation in a monetary way, the working from home, maybe it's extra vacation days, maybe it's whatever the heck. I mean, that's huge. That's a really big benefit that I think a lot of people overlook.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I did one of my podcast episodes about this too, just in terms of, a lot of people don't look at their total compensation, which you just look at, you're worried about your base, but you're not worried about what's your company actually contributing to your 401k on your behalf. What's their match? What are they paying for your health insurance coverage? You know, how much vacation do you have? Do you work from home? Do they give you a laptop computer? Like, do you have a car, a company car? Those sort of things, those contribute all to your compensation. But so often we're focused on the dollar amount. And then you look at another job, if you're trying to leave and you're just comparing salary to salary, but you're not factoring in all of those extra things, that you could end up in a worse situation.
Yeah. Oh, totally. If you're not looking out for yourself, no one else is going to do that either. So you've got to be your own advocate.
Exactly.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about this, like putting your money where your heart is. I think we've touched on it a little bit, but I just want to see if I'm understanding it correctly. So can you just give us a brief little, what is putting your money where your heart is? What does that mean?
Yeah, so it sounds kind of basic, but a lot of us just don't do the work. So going back to those goals, for example, I think we talk about, you know, I want to be debt-free, or like I want to buy a house, or I want to make more money. I hear this all the time. And financial planners do this too. My mastermind was doing this recently. Like, I just want more money. I'm like, fantastic. How much more money do you want? You can't just put it in the mold. You're not going to be happy if you just have general vague goals. And so I basically say, set goals that are going to be smart, specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and timely. You need to quantify them. You need to set a time frame on them. So instead of I want to be debt free, you're going to say, I want to pay off $10,000 of debt in the next 3 years. Or instead of I need to buy a house, you're going to say, I want to save $30,000 for a down payment on a house in 4 years. Like, those are things that you can break down into monthly savings goals. Same thing. I want to make more money. Great. How much more money do you need? So I would say, instead of I want to make more money, I'd say I want to grow my income by $5,000 per year over the next 2 years or whatever. So that's one area to start. So once you have those goals that are more detailed and specific, then it comes down to figuring out, why is this important to me? So why is buying a home important to me? How will this affect my life? Is it security for my family? Is it stability? Is it more room and flexibility for, you know, growing family or whatever it is? Or same thing, like being debt free. Is it so then I can have the freedom to travel and save for retirement? What are those things going to do, and how will they impact your life? So understanding those after you're looking at those goals. And then also, again, going back to like, do these goals reflect my values and not somebody else's? Am I basing my goals off of what I see on social media, or am I basing these goals off of what is important to me? So once you have those goals and you know that they're important to you, that's when you go back and you look at your cash flow. Like, you don't look at your budget. You don't try any type of budgeting until you know what your goals are, what you're working towards. Because again, if you're just trying to create a budget to create a budget, nobody wants to do that. Nobody wants to change just to change. Nobody likes change, realistically, let's be honest. So when you have those goals in place, then you go to your cash flow. And that's what I mean by putting your money where your heart is, because then you're going to look at your cash flow and you're going to say, okay, here's what I'm spending in these areas. Am I willing to live in a smaller apartment for the next 12 months so that I can save for that down payment and we can move and I can save $1,000 a month? Am I willing to not travel, you know, right now? Or am I willing to cut that budget in half? Am I willing to get rid of my $300 a month personal training gym budget? You know, whatever it is, when you're looking at your cash flow, then you're saying, okay, what are the must-haves? What are the things that I need to pay? Is there any flexibility there? And then what are my, I call them fun times. Like, what are the things that I need for fun? What's like my discretionary stuff? And can I get flexible there? Am I willing to stop shopping at Whole Foods for right now because I want to do these things? Or is having super healthy, fresh, organic food really important to you and you're willing to cut back in other areas, or you're willing to push your goals out even longer because you want to keep those things in your budget? That, like, those are the things too. It's okay to keep things in your budget. You don't have to cut everything out. It's just understanding that, okay, I'm willing to make this change to get to this goal sooner, or actually I'm willing to push this goal out because this other thing is so important to me. And that's how you put your money where your heart is. You actually go through where your money is going and you say, this matters, this doesn't matter. And then you feel really empowered by it because you're making the conscious decision to meet that goal or to push back that goal, whatever it is. But you have control over the situation then, as opposed to, again, trying to budget and say, like, I'm going to reduce my dining out because I'm supposed to, or because I need to save more for retirement, but I don't know how much I need for retirement or when I'm going to retire. People are just telling me to. That doesn't necessarily mean as much. So I think that's what it means to put your money where your heart is you don't do anything with your cash flow or your budgeting until you know what those specific goals are and that, and why they're important to you, because then you can make that empowered decision of, yes, this is so important to me, I'm going to keep it in my cash flow, or no, this goal is more important to me, I'm going to cut this thing out of my cash flow or reduce it or whatever.
Yeah, it makes so much sense when you actually have something you'd rather spend your money on. I think that decision becomes so much more clear. But it sounds like a simple process, but people aren't doing this enough. It's just crazy how many times we overlook the goal setting piece and the making the decision of would you rather. We always overlook that. I don't understand why.
A lot of people are overwhelmed, especially this generation, there's so much going on. And I've spoken to it a lot already, that you're literally like traveling, buying homes, changing jobs, getting married, moving across the country. And trying to save for retirement, pay down debt, and also build an emergency fund or buy cars. It's all happens. You have all of these conflicting priorities. And so it's overwhelming. And of course you can't do it all at once. That's the biggest thing going into all of this, is you just have to recognize you cannot do it all. So you have to pick the 2 to 3 top important things to you. And that's what you focus on first. You can brain dump a list. And I say in the book, like, brain dump your list of all the things that you want to do, then pick the 3 most important. That's what you work on first. You cannot work on everything at once. You can't have it all at one time. You can have it all, you can't have it all at once. So picking those 3 things will really be important to you. And that are really important for putting your cash flow or putting your money where your heart is. Mm-hmm. And I usually say it really has to be your emergency fund, your debt pay down, and you need to be stashing something away for the future. Like, those are the 3 most important things. If you're saving for a home and you're not saving anything for retirement, you need to reduce your saving for a home by a little bit and put something away for retirement. I'm not saying you need to max out your retirement and then start saving for a home, but you need to make sure you're doing something. Like, that's just it. So if you're not sure where to start, debt pay down, emergency fund, retirement, then everything else comes. Like, that's just like, you need to be doing something extra towards all of those. Not all of your money has to go there, but you need to have made a dent. Get $1,000, get $5,000 in your emergency fund, then start that travel fund. Don't be traveling if you have no cash cushion. That's just kind of how it goes. Same thing with a debt. Put more towards your debt and then start building that down payment fund or the, you know, travel fund, whatever it is. You have to get those common, that like, those core financial things in place first.
Goes back to being an adult.
Yeah. Recurring theme here.
I'm loving this. For people listening in, I could see them thinking, God, this girl's got it together. Like, she knows her stuff. She's very financially savvy. Have you always been that way? Have you always been really confident with money, or did you ever experience any anxiety? Like, you mentioned some of the clients you work with are experiencing.
Oh my gosh. I have full on bag lady syndrome, full on afraid of like, we're going to never have enough, which is like, that's my anxiety. I am an over planner. So, growing up in the family that I grew up in, it was paycheck to paycheck. It was always not enough. And so now I'm the opposite of thinking that there will never be enough. And I recognize that as a financial planner as well, which is why we had our daughter in 2015. Right around that time, we basically decided that we got our own financial planner. Like, I have it together. And, you know, I was managing our finances. And of course, we say we do all the things, but the emotional things that are there, my husband was like, we're okay. And I'm like, no, we're not okay. Because I'm also a financial planner. We plan for like conservatively and catastrophes. And so, which is very funny that I got into this industry that way. But so I'm like, these numbers say that we might not be okay. So we got our own financial planner, which is fantastic also to have. Now I have a sounding board. He's like, you're fine. And it's also really good to navigate those conversations with my husband and I. So I'm recovering bag lady syndrome, but that has been like my thing for my fear was that there was never going to be enough. And I always worked really hard. I've always been a saver, but I just couldn't get over that anxiety for a while. And it's something that carried with me. I've had to work through it. And I found that having that neutral third party in our marriage, the financial planner, has been really great for us as well, because doctors need their own doctors, attorneys need their own attorneys. And I have behavioral biases, you know, whereas I'm like, well, I'll save every penny. And my husband's like, we should enjoy ourselves. And I'm like, no, we should save everything. So I definitely had that anxiety and it's just living with it and kind of processing and going through it and recognizing that I have it and then being comfortable talking about it too. It took some time and it took some, like, that's where I talk a lot now about like women and the anxiety, and that we do a lot of us carry money scripts, like the things we were exposed to growing up, and whether it was, you know, how our parents handled finances or talked about it, or whether we got allowances, or whether we, you know, had to have jobs, or, you know, got basically whatever we wanted, you know, handed to us. Those things really impact how we handle our finances as adults. And so when I launched my firm, I dug even more into like the money psychology and those scripts and how they can influence and impede you from making progress with your money. So now being more aware of those for myself actually helps me to address those with clients as well. And yeah, I definitely would say, yes, I have anxiety around finances, but it doesn't stop us from making progress with our money.
No, I'm glad that you mentioned too, that even the pros need somebody too. Like, it's not something that, it's not embarrassing. Like, if you need help, I mean, go get the help. It's okay.
Well, because we have behavioral biases, right? Like, that's the thing, is it's really easy for me. I know all the answers, but it's really easy for me to get in my own way. Like, I'm still human. So I could basically still, like, when we got pregnant, we went through IVF, which is an expensive thing. We bought a house. We sold a condo. Like, we did, like, all, my husband started my business, and my husband transitioned out of the military. Like, all of the transitions at one time, which, like, financial planner in me knows, like, I was just saying, you know, 2 to 3 things at a time. Like, no, let's do them all at once. And, like, it was awful, but, you know, and I know that it was, like, I went into it being like, nope, we're going to do this. And we got through it fine. But yes, have we had, like, that neutral third party to be like, okay, well, let's just tackle this thing one at a time. And it's okay if you stay here a little bit longer. And would have maybe been a little smoother, but we still, like, went gung ho. So knowing that we have, you know, I'm still a human. It's nice to just have, like, that neutral third party to be like, it will be okay if you, you know, pay a higher mortgage for the next, like, 3 months, because you have the money. It's okay. Like, allow yourself to also treat yourself because you have worked hard. That's what a financial planner does for me. Cause again, I'm, like, all squirreled all the way and not treat us.
I'm the same way. I will save every single dime I have. So that's why the travel thing is such a big deal for me, because that's a newer thing. It took me a long time to give myself permission to go spend money, mm-hmm. which sounds silly, but it's kind of the way it was for me.
Yeah. And it's really interesting. I mean, for me, like, growing up in the family that I grew up in and being, I'm in a different place than they are. And so being able to do those things and take those trips and to buy those things and have the house that we have and, like, these things, is there's a lot of guilt around that too. Mm-hmm. I almost feel like sometimes I'm proud of where I've gotten, but I never want to seem showy either, you know, because I don't want, and so it's just, and those are all interesting, like, family things that just, like, that I carry with me. And so, you know, I think it just takes a lot of work and navigation to get through those things.
Oh, I'm glad that you mentioned that. We're going to have to, I mean, I know we're running out of time, but we will definitely have to bring you on again to talk about the guilt piece and then talk a little bit about entrepreneurship. Cause I think you've done really, really well for yourself in an industry that doesn't change much. So I think it's a cool conversation to have again at some point.
Yes, definitely.
So where do people go to connect with you, learn more about all of your work, maybe even sign up and be one of your clients? How do they find you?
So you can find me at workablewealth.com. And then I'm also on Instagram and Twitter at Mary B. Storj, S-T-O-R-J. And then the podcast that launched, I think in February, is it's called Work Your Wealth. So you can just do a search for that podcast and you can listen to some of the episodes there too.
Sweet. Well, thank you so much for hanging out today. This has been so much fun, and I got some good notes too.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right, guys, what'd you think? I loved this episode with Mary Beth. I thought it was so cool. The part that really stuck out to me, and I think hopefully did for you as well, is this whole concept of putting your money where your heart is. And I thought that was really cool, because so many times we get caught up into personal finance being this kind of dry, boring subject. But when you put your heart exactly where your money is, that's when you start to have more fun, you start to enjoy life, and it starts to become a little bit more, I guess, not so boring and not so mundane. It's just a very, very different way of looking at it. So I really liked that whole perspective. The other thing that I really liked from this episode was her comment of don't create a budget just to budget. I thought that was a really good way to go, because so many times we just create a budget because we think that's what we are supposed to do. And that's not necessarily the case. So I love this episode. If you got a lot of value out of it as well, make sure you share it with somebody that you think could benefit from this topic. And if you would like to do me a favor, subscribe, leave a review, share the episode. All of that stuff means the world to me. All right, guys, that is it for today. Thank you so much for joining, and I will see you next week for another episode of the Money Nerds Podcast. See you later.